could tighter gun control be coming to New York State? Now that moderate suburban voters appear to be turning out for Democrats, the odds are better than they've been in a while. After Texas shooter Devin Kelly gunned down worshipers in a church, it was discovered that he had a history of domestic violence. State Senator Brad Hoylman is urging passage of a bill that would keep guns out of the hands of people with that kind of history, and he joins us now with more. Senator Hoylman, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Susan.
So do you believe then that there is a link to be made between last week's Democratic wins and the possibility of dealing with gun control here in New York, if not in Washington?
I certainly think that there's been a shift in the public consciousness. We've seen it in states like Virginia and elsewhere. People are more cognizant that their public officials are failing to pass policies, common sense gun policies, for example, and most notably, that could save lives.
What does it say about our country that we saw two mass murders by gun in the last few weeks, and there's no real national call to deal with this issue at this point?
You know, the NRA is a clever group of lobbyists who are very good at diverting and distracting. We saw that after the Las Vegas shootings, when supposedly they said that we now need to make bump stocks illegal. Well, that's not exactly what they said. And instead, what they did is deflect. And here we are a month later after Las Vegas, and bump stocks are still legal. They're legal to possess in New York State, as a matter of fact, just not legal to own. Now, you try to figure out the distinction between possessing a bump stock and using a bump stock in a place like New York. Congress hasn't acted. Really, it's up to the state legislature to do it.
All right, so tell us about your legislation, which I believe is called the Safe Homes Act.
The Safe Homes Act, yes, Susan. It's a bill I carry with Assemblywoman Neely Rozic, and it authorizes law enforcement officers to take temporary custody of guns they find at the scene of domestic violence incident. Now, that's so important because we know that there is a strong connection between domestic violence and the use of guns and violence. The figure is astounding. Over 4 million American women have claimed to have been threatened by a gun in their home. Now, can you imagine that staggering statistic? So we see that time and time again, where guns are being used by dangerous people in domestic situations. And we need to empower law enforcement officers to take action when they come onto a scene where they might discover guns when they go to a scene of a domestic violence.
But right,
they should have the authority to take temporary custody of those firearms, and they should be required to take temporary custody of those weapons if there's a person involved in a domestic dispute who's arrested.
So right now, if a police officer goes to a domestic call in which a firearm is being used or wielded in some way, they don't take the gun unless the gun is not licensed. Is that correct? I've read.
That's correct. And, you know, this is not really path-breaking public policy. 18 other states already have similar laws like this on the books. And we're talking traditional gun-friendly states like Alaska and Arizona and in Montana. New York needs to get with the program.
So my understanding is that this has been pushed by you in the past, but hasn't gone anywhere. What's been the problem?
Well, we're looking at, a Republican state Senate. And I've said it before on your program, but the Senate seems to be the place where all good ideas go to die. And we haven't had any hearings on the Safe Homes Act. We've had no votes on the Safe Homes Act. And unfortunately, we're going to see little action on the Safe Homes Act unless our electorate rises up and demands action from legislators.
So what has the Senate Majority Leader, John Flanagan, said about the possibility of bringing the Safe Homes Act to the floor for a vote this year?
He said nothing, and that's how the Republicans get away with not acting on crucial public policy issues like guns. They obfuscate, they delay, they don't bring bills up for a vote. They get to hide behind groups like the NRA who do deflecting at a national and state level all too well, as we saw with the bump stock example.
What about the IDC? Will the IDC put its weight behind the bill? And that's the Independent Democratic Conference for my listeners.
I'd like to think so. I mean, certainly the IDC has a number of members who have supported gun legislation in the past consistently, including voting for the SAFE Act, which, credit to Governor Cuomo and to my colleagues in the legislature, is one of the toughest gun laws in the country. But we need to continue to build on sensible gun legislation when we see, in particular, incidents of domestic violence being connected to tragedies like we saw in Texas.
So exacerbating these shootings is something else, and that's sloppy bookkeeping. It happened here in this latest shooting in Texas with the Air Force. It also happened in the Dylann Roof case. I don't know if you remember that. The FBI didn't put Dylann Roof on some sort of no-gun buy list. So how do we make that a priority? I mean, that seems to be much more easy fix, just, you know, better implementation of the laws that are already on the books.
Definitely, we have to make these type of incidents a priority for reporting at every level of government. It's inexcusable, really, that people die because of what, you know, as you say, an accounting error. It's just inexcusable, and frankly, it's sickening.
So I was hoping that we could look toward January. This is the next part of the legislative session, and I'm wondering if you think what's happening in D.C. might change the dynamics in the state Senate at all.
Well, you know, I would hope so. The fact that Republicans are running scared, the fact that they are feeling pressure, the fact that it's our state legislatures that control redistricting, which is so important, Susan. You know, it was estimated by the Brennan Center recently that if the districts were drawn fairly in New York State, the Democrats in the Senate would pick up 8 to 10 more seats. That's how out of whack and that's how bad gerrymandering has been in New York. And you saw that on the front page of the New York Times today about New York and other states may not have these watershed elections in 2018 because of the extreme gerrymandered.
Who do you blame for that?
You know, I kind of blame both parties, frankly.
I mean, I was going to say,
Yeah, both the Republicans and the Democrats over the years under Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos, they were in cahoots with each other.
Yeah.
They were in cahoots with and we'll draw ours and never the twain shall meet. Well, nobody was taking into account fairness in either chamber. And it's been this type of ossified, unholy alliance between Republicans and Democrats in Albany that has led us to this point where we have the Senate being so unfairly unrepresentative of the people of New York State that it could account to up to 10 more Senate seats. I'm glad there's a Supreme Court lawsuit on this very issue.
Gil v. Whitford, yeah.
I'm hoping that it reverberates, you know, down to the state legislatures, and including New York.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure that, you know, the state Senate and the assembly and perhaps the governor even would say, but hey, we passed a constitutional change to redo gerrymandering a few years ago.
It kicked the can down the road.
In what way?
Well, it didn't happen immediately, which is what I think we all need. And it allows for a significant delay. At the end of the day, the redistricting plan that was passed will have to be approved by the state legislature. And so we didn't get the reform at the level of California. It is something, but it is not immediate. And I think that's what you're seeing, though, throughout New York and across the country. People are looking for immediate action to everyday problems like gun violence.
What are the possible chances, as we look forward toward January, of reunifying the Senate Democrats? Because there seem to be three different factions there.
You know, I think everyone hopefully will come to their senses. And frankly, I think it's got to be an issue of political self-preservation. The fact that you are going to have already people challenging Democrats in primaries maybe doesn't need to happen. If people would just reunite and form what you know everyone agrees to be the best action for the party in the state Senate, which is a united Democratic front. We can't fight two battles in Albany and then try to successfully wage war against the Republicans. We have to be, in my opinion, united in allegiance on day one in order to actually win the Senate chamber back. Look, I'm hopeful. I know Andrew Stewart Cousins, you know, wants to form and has said repeatedly, as has Jeff Klein, that co-leadership arrangement in the Senate is possible.
And so you would be fine with that, a co-leadership thing?
I'm fine with that. I think every one of my colleagues is. Anything that gets us to the point where we can actually get bills like the Safe Homes Act introduced on the floor for a vote, forget about passing it. Let's just have a debate. Let's just have a committee discussion. Let's get transparency and focus on the issues that New Yorkers care about instead of shunting these issues off to a side, never allowing them for a vote, and moving forward like as if people don't care about issues like gun violence.
Can you explain to my listeners why, if really Jeff Klein and Andrea Stewart Cousins want the same thing, that it hasn't happened yet?
I think part of it is timing. Clearly, there is a game of, you know, chicken of sorts being being played, and neither side wants to maybe move at this point because, well, perhaps there's a budget to be discussed, and you know, there's another 6 months of negotiations. I mean, to me, I'm like, you know, it's time to move now, in my opinion. But so there is some politics, most certainly. But I do think we're getting closer, and I do have to commend both sides. And when I say both sides, I mean all of my colleagues in the Democratic Party, including the governor, for continuing to push this. He said the other day he doesn't care who has a you know, special license plate or a corner office.
Right.
He just wants the Democrats united. I take him at his word that it is better for the people of the state of New York to have a united Democratic Senate.
You know, starting in January, by the way, you're going to have two openings, thanks to a win in Westchester by George Latimer and a win in New York City by Senator Diaz. So what are you hoping to see from the governor? Because he needs to set that special election up, I would assume.
Yes, and I'm hopeful that he'll set an election very soon, because you can't have districts, over a million people, being unrepresented, especially during the budget season. It would seem that there are a lot of needs that have to be identified by legislators during that very crucial time when, you know, $160 billion of state taxpayers' money is being allocated. These districts need representation. So I would, you know, respectfully urge the governor to do it sooner rather than later and put the politics aside. Let's just get the representatives for the people. You know, no taxation without representation. So nothing is more relevant than the budget season when it comes to that phrase.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to share with my listeners?
Well, I'm calling you. Last time I called you from Essebagel.
Yeah.
The bagel shop in my district. And today I'm calling you from the Merchant House Museum in New York on 4th Street. It's 180 years old, one of the oldest buildings in New York City, and the first landmarked building in Manhattan. So I really urge your listeners to come and look at this incredible treasure trove.
The Merchant House Museum.
Merchant House Museum, built in 1832. It's New York City's only 19th century home, preserved intact with the family's original furnishings and personal belongings.
We have to go, but I want to thank you so much for introducing us to that museum. Brad Hoylman, thank you.
Nice talking to you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.